But first to My Care Story, a regular feature on the programme where a carer or somebody being cared for shares their own personal story with both you and with me. In the main, stories of inspiration reminding us that, well, we're not alone in the care community. Alison Carr has dedicated her life to helping others. She's a wife, a mum of three beautiful children, and a staunch believer in the rights of carers. However, on the 9th of November 2000, Alison's world was quite literally turned upside down when her son Fraser contracted encephalitis, a virus that attacks the brain. And up until then, Fraser was a healthy, fun-loving 9-year-old. Alison joins me in the studio to talk about her journey that Alison, her family and Fraser has been on for what must be, what, 18 years now, Alison?
Fraser's 27 now.
Let's go back to that day, the 9th of November, which you remember vividly, as any parent would. Just talk us through it. What happened?
Well, Fraser, in July the 2000, had walked the West White Highland Way with my husband and myself, and we had a fantastic week's walking. We are a very fit family and always like to do sporty activities as a family. Fraser played football and he was a black belt at karate. So just after the West Highland Way, he'd gone out to my sister's in Canada, and on his return he just seemed a bit listless, and we just put it down to a bit of jet lag and just maybe hormones at 9-year-old. So in the October, we had gone to Tenerife for my stepdad's 60th birthday, and he seemed lively enough playing water polo, pool, and you never got a minute to lie in the sun, to be honest. In the October, he got his meningitis C vaccination, and it was 10 days after the vaccination that Fraser took ill. But I have never blamed the vaccination, because I feel that it is important to get your children vaccinated. And it was maybe a coincidence the illness occurred just after the vaccine. But on this Sunday before the 9th of November, Fraser had been playing football, and he was taken off by his coach because he felt unwell. So he came home, had a bath, the usual Calpol, and lay on the settee and was watching the telly. We took him to the GP on the Monday, and they diagnosed tonsillitis, and he was given penicillin. And then he seemed to pick up on the Tuesday. And then again, he was very flat again on the Wednesday. Your biggest fear is meningitis, but there was no rash.
Are they similar symptoms?
Yes, high temperature, nausea, headache. But there was no signs of a rash. So I was quite happy that, well, not happy, but it was just a viral infection and it needed to take its course. Unfortunately, on the Thursday, he said, "Mum, I can't see." And again, he was taken to the doctors, who immediately sent him up to the hospital. The hospital were absolutely fantastic. They took his bloods, and all it showed was his potassium and sodium levels were low. But he was kept in for observation because he was slightly dehydrated.
So when he said he couldn't see completely, was his vision blurred?
His vision just obviously went completely black for maybe a couple of seconds. So I remember that Thursday night, there was a little boy, Arne. He was 9 years old as well, with his mother. And Arne had taken a stroke, and he had no speech, and I just felt sorry for Arne and the mum. And I always remember there was a little baby called Joseph who had epilepsy. And again, I was saying to myself, well, here's me worried sick about a viral infection, and these poor families are going through what they're going through. Not to know that was what was to come for us the next day. Fraser woke up on the Friday morning and his face started to twitch, which was very unusual. So then that's when the consultants were called, and it just completely went downhill after that. He was taken into high dependency, where they shut down his brain and in deep sedation, and just to see how things went. Unfortunately, during the night on that Friday, we had a knock on the door to say that Fraser was really struggling and he was having to go into ICU. Normally at that age, they're taken through to Edinburgh Sick Kids, but he was too critical to travel. So he was put into intensive care, and they said they would completely shut his brain down over that weekend in the hope that the swelling of the brain wouldn't cause any damage, because by that time they had done a scan and they ruled out meningitis and they ruled out a brain tumour. We had never heard of encephalitis. It was a completely new illness to us. So he was shut down for the weekend, and then on the Monday he was given an MRI scan where we were given the devastating news that he only had about half an hour to live, because the swelling was heading to his brainstem, and the brainstem controls breathing and heartbeat. So it was very hard to take in. My husband completely broke down, and I was actually quite strong. That was a very, very strange scenario. But I had this feeling as a mum that he wasn't going to die. I just don't know what it was. And my husband had to say, look, you know, this is going to happen. You have to prepare yourself. And I remember going into intensive care and lying by his bed and just had the feeling, no, you're not going to die. You're a fighter. And he's 27 years old now, and he fought and fought and fought. He hasn't got a life that I would have liked for my 27-year-old. He could have been married now. He could have had children. I often wonder what kind of career he would have had. But, you know, you can't live in the past, and you have to move forward. And he has a fantastic care package now, and both our lives, myself, my husband's life, has completely changed since his illness. Went on to have Isla and Heather, and completely changed our career paths, and it just didn't break us, and we're celebrating our silver wedding next year.
Can I ask what is his daily life like, in terms of is he able to communicate?
He communicates with his eyes. He has no speech, and you can tell when he's happy because he smiles a lot. You can tell when he's sad. You can tell when he's completely fed up, like a lot of people sometimes are on a daily basis. But the contact that you get from his eyes tells a lot. You know, he can pout his lips out for a kiss. He likes his cuddles. Just a very, very loving boy. We were thankfully with encephalitis. In some cases, it can leave people with behavioural and aggression, but he's never had any of that after the illness.
And has his brain grown at all? You know, since he was nine. So has he developed? Or has his brain developed as a 27-year-old's brain would develop?
No,
or
no.
Is he as he was when he was nine?
We could never tell what he knows, but all we know is that obviously things have deteriorated due to the epilepsy that he was left with, because at one point he was taken up to about 100 seizures a day, because after the illness he was able to say his name, and he was able to, he's a Dundee FC avid fan, and he was able to recognise the football players and say Dundee FC, and he still actually goes to the football. But I would say that we just don't know. That he's never been given another MRI scan, because there's not been any change, really, you know.
Let's talk about your journey and your husband's journey, and indeed the family. Did you have to adapt very, very quickly?
We were thrown into a life of the unknown, basically, after Fraser's illness, and we lost a lot of things. Actually, we when my husband and I met, we owned our own flat and had a mortgage, and then we sold our flat, and then we were living in a semi, and then when Fraser took ill, we had to move into adapted property. Fraser was in hospital for 2 years, so it took a while to eventually get him home. And when he got home, he stayed home, thankfully. But, you know, financially, it's not been a very good journey, because we were basically forced to sell our house because we had too much equity in our home. You know, so when we were living in the housing association house, you know, we were getting a bit of help because I was only working 3 days a week, and my husband completely gave up his job to care for Fraser. So we were getting a bit of help, and then the bombshell came through the door that all our help was getting stopped because we had too much equity in our home. So we basically lost our home and all the basically probably money that we could have had now, you know.
Part of this feature, My Care Story, is to share exactly what you're talking about very bravely today, Alison. How did you and your husband get through those darker times? When did the resilience kick in? You talked about being really strong when Fraser was diagnosed, and you knew that he wasn't going to die. Mm-hmm. How do you keep going?
I've got this prerogative: you either sink or swim, you know. And thankfully, we decided to swim and not sink. We had to be strong, obviously, for Fraser to get him through all the bad days. And we went on to have Isla, who's 15, and Heather, who is 13. And it was always my dream to go to the Himalayas, and I went to Everest Base Camp for my 40th birthday, and left a little, not obviously memorial, but left a little item up on Everest, you know, to recognise, you know, what my son had been through. And it was whilst when I came back from Everest, I'd worked in law since I was 16, right up to the day I came back from Everest, and caring for kids had helped the family in a time of need.
Which is a local charity.
And they were absolutely fantastic, supplying various equipment to help Fraser's needs, such as specialised beds and things. And it just gave me some energy to give back to the charity and to start fundraising. But previously, the encephalitis support group in York were fantastic to the family, and they are still obviously ongoing in giving advice and help to families that have people who have a journey through encephalitis or have recently been diagnosed with encephalitis, because you don't know where to turn at the beginning. It's a life that you never ever thought that you would be thrown into. But then you just have to adapt and be strong and get on with life.
And how much pressure was put on yourself and your husband? Did you, was the pressure put on the marriage?
It's made us stronger. We're celebrating our 25th anniversary next year. But I do remember an incident where, this is before Fraser had the care package, and we were showering Fraser, and I was probably annoying my husband, and my husband was annoying me, and he ended up putting the shower all over me. And I went away to my bed with a little pout and started crying. But, you know, other than that, no, I think it's made us stronger, actually. And we are probably in the minority, because there is a lot of relationships that actually break up due to the pressure of looking after a disabled child.
And what about the girls? How do they see Fraser as... Because they were obviously...
Into Fraser's disability. Yeah. And they have been fantastic to Fraser. They assist when the carers finish. They know how to do medication. They know how to do his gastrostomy feeding. And they're a joy to have. And they've been brought up to be independent, and they are two independent young ladies now.
I mentioned in the introduction about being a staunch supporter of carers and their rights in particular. Before we went live, you were talking about a view that you have in terms of campaigning for rights and for money. You were telling me a story about funding being cut. Just share that with me.
Yes, obviously my husband received carers allowance for my son. When the carers aren't there, he makes up the medication. We're both together, he's doubly incontinent, we have to change him. So the carers finish at 8 o'clock at night, and that's us to 8 o'clock the next morning. So we obviously have to change Fraser and do bits and bobs before he retires to bed at night. So my husband went to university and got a degree in forensic science. Unfortunately, he hasn't got a job in that profession as yet, but he works casual hours in a local golf centre. So because he works more than 16 hours a week, the whole benefit was cut. And I would like to see in the future that it doesn't matter how many hours a week you work, it should go on how many hours a week you care for that person. So, and also the rule is if you work more than 16 hours a week and earn more than £110 a week, your carer's allowance is cut. So I want to see a change in that, because obviously we are looking after our son at home a lot more hours than 16 hours a week. So I would like to see the Scottish Government or the UK Government change on how they perceive people caring for someone.
Two more points, and we'll ask this of every guest that comes on My Care Story on this segment. One bit of advice you could give somebody who's listening to this, a carer who may find them in a similar situation, or could be any care environment. One bit of advice you would give them, what would it be from your years of experience?
Keep fighting, basically. You know, we had to fight for our son's care package, and we actually refused to take him home from hospital until we had something in place. You know, you have to be very, very strong, and you really have to stand up to people that are telling you, no, there's no money there, for this care package, this and that. You know, we just kept fighting for what we wanted, so that Fraser would get the best out of his life. And he has a care package with the Inclusion Group in Dundee, who have completely changed our lives. My husband's able to go out to work. I work full time in the community, and it's just giving everybody a life back. Just because you're caring for someone at home doesn't mean you or that person's life has to stop. You know, you have to go out there and look to see what help is out there. The British government shut down the Independent Living Fund, who used to pay for Fraser's care, and it was shut down in England and Wales. The care was then, the monies were transferred to the local authority, and thousands of people's hours were cut due to this. Luckily enough, the Scottish Government stepped in and said, you cannot do this to people or the families. And about 2-3 years ago, the Scottish Independent Living Fund was formed.
But we've got to say then it'd be different in England,
in
Wales and
Northern Ireland.
Yeah.
But if anybody's listening here from Scotland, there is the Scottish Independent Living Fund. which you can access on the website, just to see if they are there, could be there to help you.
Okay, let's finish on a song, and we ask all our guests this. Before we do it, Alison, thank you so much for your honesty, your bravery, and being willing to share that story. We're asking every guest to think about a song or play a song that reminds them of the person that they care for. So tell us what you've chosen and why.
I've chosen Kung Fu Fighting because, like I say, Fraser was a black belt at his karate. And every time I was taking him to the karate in the car, we would put the Kung Fu Fighting song on, and it just brings back so many good memories of when Fraser was a fit and healthy young lad. And just doesn't make me sad, it makes me smile.
Alison Carr, thank you very much indeed.
Oh, oh, oh. Everybody was kung fu fighting. Those kids were fast as lightning. In fact, it was a little bit frightening. But they fought with expert timing. There were funky Chinamen from funky Chinatown. They were chopping them up. They were chopping them.
From the 70s, of course, Carl Douglas and Kung Fu Fighting, a favourite of Fraser and Alison Carr. And once again, my thanks to Alison for sharing her story today on the programme.